Well, when we get to old business, let's talk about rack schedules and go from there. I guess we need an approval of the agenda. Everybody have a chance to look at the agenda? Need a motion?
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Moved by Todd, seconded by Blair. All in favor? Unanimous. I need approval for the minutes from the last unofficial meeting we had. I don't know, can we approve?
Do we have minutes?
Can we approve minutes if we didn't have a quorum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's see, we don't have a quorum now?
Yeah, we have a quorum, but we didn't last time, so do the minutes need to be ratified?
Let's do it.
All right.
Move to approve.
I'll second that.
Todd, motion, Blair, second. All in favor? Unanimous?
I abstained because I wasn't at the meeting, so.
Okay.
Slide on down, abstain.
Okay, old business. We tried to make an effort to move the meeting around a little bit to see if we get some more public input, and I think it worked that way, but it seemed that when we went south, the north rack members had a hard time getting here, and when we went north, the south rack members had a hard time, so. I guess it's up to you, but I'd like to suggest that Green River seems to have, we've never had a problem with a quorum at Green River before, and I know Charlie's probably got to come the furthest, and would you rather come to Green River every time, or would you like to try to make a trip clear to Castledale or Price once or twice a year?
I don't care. It don't matter to me.
Either way.
I mean, you got to leave town, you got to leave town. No matter if it's 2 hours or 3 hours.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty much shoots the day.
Yeah.
So I don't care.
Especially these short days.
Yeah.
The new rack schedule is on the website now, so make sure you guys look at it and mark those dates down and try to save them for 2013.
I also put it on everybody's, one of their place settings.
Oh, perfect. Oh, yeah, I didn't even notice. Thanks, Brent.
This doesn't look complete on here, though.
Oh, really?
The paper isn't. We're missing, we've got a gap between April and September.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, we have one in May and one in July.
I'll just email it to the doctor.
Oh, so mine, I got mine on the back.
Oh, ours didn't. We didn't get two-sided on ours.
You know who matters. You just need the reminder more than the rest of us.
I'll take that.
Well, I guess with that, I'd kind of like some kind of a formal decision from the RAC folks present tonight.
You want a motion to have it all in Green River?
Well, I want a motion for what you guys want. I don't want to dictate, but I'm just kind of, my feelings were that it worked out better in Green River.
I would just say that based on the hours that it takes to go to travel to Monticello or to Blanding, no one, only speaking federal government wise, we would hit the mandate that we would have to stay overnight. And the problem with that is with shrinking budgets, there's travel caps, and that made it very difficult to do that. So with the Green River, with that is much better.
Okay. Charlie kind of told us what he thought. Anybody else have an opinion?
Nope.
Okay, with that, I'll entertain a motion if somebody wants to make one.
I make a motion that we just keep them here in Green River.
Second that.
Okay, motion made by Charlie, seconded by Chris to have the 2013. And I guess can we make that to include the December meeting as well?
Perfect. talking about this December one?
Yes. Do you have plans for it somewhere else?
Yeah, I was wondering if we have enough time to, I guess I could call Stacy Coons and see if that's legitimate, we can do that.
Where is it scheduled to be?
In Blandin.
In Blandin?
Yeah. I can make a call and see if it'd be okay if we listen to it.
You got an opinion, Justin?
I don't have an opinion, but I do want to point out that the reason that we started moving the racks to different regions was when we had open houses across the region, open houses in Blanding, they wanted to discuss bears, and so it was, okay, can you have your bear rack down here? And when we had open houses in Price, it was the public overwhelmingly was saying, you know, we want to have our big game ones up here in Price. So I just wanted you to keep that in mind as to remember why we had them. I don't have an opinion where we have them, but it was just, that's why we started moving them in the first place. So.
Right.
So.
What was the date of the December meeting?
Let's see.
The 12th of December. 12-12-12.
For the 2012. Why don't we just leave that one where it is? Then we don't have any complications.
Okay. So December.
Change in January.
Start with 2013. We'll have them all here in Green River. Okay.
Todd, take your wives that way.
That's the middle.
Landing's such a nice
it's
place.
It's tough.
Hey, Harris, do we have a full view on this?
Not yet.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second, and all in favor.
Well, I just got a question. Is that with the December or without?
No, without.
That's without this December. It's unanimous. And this December 12th, this coming month, we'll be going to Blanding, I guess. Okay.
Down at the college?
Yes.
Okay, I hope we have a quorum. Is anybody here right now think they won't be making that December meeting? Todd?
You have a Blanding problem, don't you?
I don't, but I love Blanding. It's beautiful. It's just...
Okay, I'll you think you're going to have a problem, Kevin, with having to spend the night down there?
It's a beautiful, it could be a conflict, but I will do my best to be there.
Okay. Can't you have some kind of a foresters meeting like the next day or something?
Well, they just don't allow travel now. So.
Okay. All right. I guess we're to the regional update. Chris, you got a regional update?
Yeah. My name is the Habitat Program Manager. I'm filling in for Bill Bates today. He's in Seattle visiting family, so I wanted to excuse him. Are you going to... Brent, are you on the computer?
Yeah.
Okay. As you probably know, our director, Jim Karpowitz, is retiring this month. There's actually an open house for him on Monday, the 26th of November, in Salt Lake City at the, I think it's the Lee Cave Center, is that right? And so we're at from 2 to 4, there's an open house to honor him and his service he has for the division. They did interviews for our new director job 2 weeks ago, and we haven't heard yet who the new director is, so we're still kind of waiting. It should be announced, I imagine, any day now. So I was hoping to have an announcement here today,
yeah.
not so much. Our aquatics section's been busy. They do a lot of annual surveying this time of year. They've been in Strait Canyon. They surveyed a mile-long stretch and saw several hundred brown trout. They were checking for tiger muskies that came over from the reservoir in their sampling, and they did not find any tiger muskies. So that was a good thing. Our aquatics manager pointed out that Strait Canyon is going to be a good alternative for fly fishermen in the upcoming year, two or three, as Huntington Creek has some water quality issues and some mudslide issues and erosion issues. Strait Canyon will be a great alternative. They've also done some sampling in Huntington Creek, Price River, San Rafael, and Mud Creek for damage that was done by the Sealy Fire this summer. They're talking about perhaps stocking some of those streams in the upcoming years. It's going to take a few years for the Huntington Creek to settle before it's worthwhile to restock that creek. He noted that the entire stretch of the Price River and the San Rafael River received some fish kill as a result of that erosion and flooding from the fire. And so there's talk of even doing some native transplants or restocking in those stretches of the rivers as well. They did some gill netting in both Schofield Reservoir and Electric Lake in October. They're finding that the slot limits are working at Schofield. The cutthroat are surviving and growing well. They anticipate a really good ice fishing year at Schofield with some of the gill net surveys they've done. He also mentioned that Kokanee salmon will be stocked next spring in Electric Lake. And so in 2 or 3 years from now, there could be some good Kokanee salmon fishing in Electric Lake. It was on the news a little bit about Lower Fish Creek. The Bureau of Reclamation and some of the water user groups turned off the water at Schofield, and they probably did it too quickly. And as a result, a mile from the dam, a mile downriver, or down creek stream, we had fish kill. And so we've talked with them. They're going to work with us in the future. They understand the importance of not shutting it off so quickly. And we're restocking that area in the spring and summer in 2013. And fish that are below a mile from the dam will also recolonize those areas that are now watered. So that hit the news, but it's something we work with them on, and it was kind of a misunderstanding, I believe. Conservation outreach. Brent's been busy working on a TV show with Emory Telcom. I believe it shows every Friday.
Yes.
Twice, I think 5 and at 10 or something like that.
Yeah, once in the morning as well.
Okay, and so Emory Telcom, the actual channel, so you have to be a Comcast, or you have to
be a
subscriber to Emory Telcom's
cable
network.
It does air Carbon, Emory, Grand, and San Juan counties.
There you go. And they've been following us around, some of the efforts we've done on whether it be habitat projects or aquatics, fishing,
wildlife management areas.
And law enforcement officers, I think they've been following them around, check stations, things like that. They make these 30-minute segments and produce these really nice shows. And Brent's a co-host on the show. We also have done a kid shooting event at North Springs on September 29th. And then we had some Green River fishing events on October 8th. And then last week, or is it this week? No, last week, I guess. Brent hosted some media, someone from the Carbon Emory Telcom station, and Sun Advocate, and the newspaper there in Price, and they did some fishing on Schofield and showcased that fishery. The habitat section's been busy doing habitat work. This is our busiest time of the year. It's the time of year we try to get seed on the ground for winter moisture and for the spring moisture so things green up. We've done a variety of projects. Some of the projects are stream restoration projects along the San Rafael. We did a wetland planting actually on Saturday at the Matheson Preserve in Moab. We've done some big game habitat work both at Gordon Creek and on Poison Springs Bench in Emory County. We did a Gunnison sage-grouse project with the Nature Conservancy just east of Monticello there. So we're hitting all kinds of habitats, trying to improve habitat for game and non-game species. Law enforcement's been busy as well. These two pictures on the top of the screen, that case came about last fall, and it's just been recently adjudicated. I guess those two pictures are of pictures of posts that those kids put on Facebook. And with those pictures on Facebook and then some subsequent leads, they were able to press charges and those kids faced several thousand dollars worth of fines and revocation, had their license revocated and such. They're currently working on, I believe, 24 active cases in our region from August through October this month.
Yeah.
A variety of different cases there, but some involve wasted deer and elk and other poaching cases. So it's always busy for law enforcement, especially this time of year. Our wildlife section has been busy also. There's been several chucker hunts. We planted chuckers at Gordon Creek and had a youth chucker hunt in September. And then the last two weekends, we've planted pheasants both at Huntington Game Farm and at Desert Lake, and have provided opportunities for adults and youth to hunt chuckers, or pheasants, sorry. We've also been collecting CWD samples at our check stations during the hunts. I think Justin pointed out today that to me that there's not a whole lot of people stopping at these CWD sampling tables, and they don't know if it's just people aren't interested anymore or they're not worried about the disease, but it's a pretty low number of samples this year. Currently, they're doing bighorn sheep flights, looking for rams, looking for ewes, doing the ram to ewe ratios, and then later this month and in December, we'll be looking at deer classifications and looking for buck to doe ratios and fawn to doe ratios. That's all I got. Any questions?
Any questions for Chris? With that, I'll give a quick summary on what happened at the board meeting on November 1st. There was a fairly lengthy discussion on the Manti cougar harvest. The local cougar hunters felt like the Manti was going to be decimated with too much cougar removal. That prompted John Shivick to kind of put together a quick summary of kind of cougar biology and what data we've got under this new cougar management plan. Bottom line is the board decided to not do anything with the Manti cougar harvest other than to keep a close eye on it, and if the female harvest gets excessive early in the season, they'll pursue an emergency closure from executive decision from the director's office. The meat of the board meeting was on the aquatics, and there was a pretty big public push to increase the possession limit on fish. Right now, it's one daily bag is the possession limit. And some people felt that that was restrictive. That some people like to bottle fish, and so if they're in their freezer or on their shelf, they felt like that shouldn't count toward as a possession limit. But the board decided to put that on the action log, and so somebody from the division is probably going to be presenting something to the board prior to the recommendations for 2014. There was also a big push from spearfishing interests. They felt that it really doesn't matter whether you're taking a fish hook and line or with a spear, as long as you're within the bag limit, that it ought to be as a legitimate way to harvest fish is a hook and line. There was several organized fishing clubs present to kind of counteract that. They felt like it was a lot of waste on fish. With hook and line, you can catch and release. With spear fishing, there's no release involved once you've taken that fish. That was also put on the action log, and the division's been directed to get all the user groups together, including spearfishing, and try to come up with some kind of a recommendation for how to incorporate spearfishing into the angling end of things. Joe's Valley, we had those that were present at the meeting had there was big push from the public to do away with the November closure, November December closure at Joe's Valley. some of that same interest showed up at the board meeting and was able to get the board to kind of, even without RAC input from all RACs, all they had was input from our RAC, and it was a non-quorum RAC, so there really was no vote. But with what our RAC expressed in the minutes of the meeting and the public that was at the board meeting, the board did decide to do away with that closure. So starting in 2013, Joe's Valley will not have a seasonal closure. And then the rest of the fishing guidebook passed as presented by the division. Then there's conservation permit audit was presented. I have a copy of that audit if anybody's interested in looking at it. They're more than welcome to take a look at it. And then they redid the three-year conservation permit, or the multi-year permit for conservation permits was allocated. All the permits were allocated to the clubs that had it. And I've got a list of that too, if anybody wants to see which organizations got which permits. And then they passed the RAC and board schedule that some of us have and some of partially, but it is on the website.
So.
Okay, and it's on the division website now, so it's not that hard to look it up. I guess that's it for the board. If anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to try to.
I got a question, and maybe Justin or whoever feels. I've received some of those phone calls about the Cougar Management Plan as well, and I know that when we approved the plan, I felt like I understood it well. But since I received many phone calls, and the way it was explained to me from Cougar Hunters was that they had a concern that the Central Mountains Manti, why it is part of the sheep management zone and why there's an increased number on there. And I felt inadequate to answer that question or didn't know even for sure if that was the case. And I was just wondering if Justin or Anise could address that on how that is.
Either one. It's not actually part of the sheep zone. It's part of the way they did it is they made the cougar units match our deer monitoring units. So the Manti and the Wasatch both are one unit for that monitoring. So they tied all cougar harvest surrounding that to those units so we can basically see how our deer are doing and then tie cougar harvest to it. Because of that, within the Wasatch, there are some sheep units where we want harvest to go on year round and we issue more permits. But so those don't close, but there is a potential for the Manti to close if we reach the female subquota. And
so if I understand that right, there could be or there is an increase in tags on those units, but if it does reach the quota on the female subquota.
Right. Yeah, it is a higher quota because we are trying, so it is a higher quota on the whole, whatever you want to call it, area, because of those sheep units. And because those sheep units are harder to hunt, obviously, because, you know, dogs can't really run in areas where sheep are and it's pretty steep stuff, the people do kind of gravitate to the easier units to hunt, which ends up being the Manti, and that's their concern.
Any other questions? Okay, with that, we'll move into the first action item with the Bucks and Bulls once in a lifetime season dates and application timeline.
Thank you.
Dave. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, RAC members. As you mentioned, I'll be presenting the Bucks and Bulls and once-in-a-lifetime season dates and rule and boundary changes. We'll start off with deer. Before I start, I guess I want to preface, there's really not a whole lot of big changes this year. The season dates for most things are the same as they were last year. We just kind of shifted them one day to match the calendar dates. So having said that, our 2013 general season deer hunt dates will be fairly similar to what they were this year. The archery season will start August 17th and end September 13th, 28-day season. The muzzleloader hunt will be from September 25th to October 3rd, a 9-day season. And then the any weapon, which is what we call a rifle hunt, will be October 19th through the 27th. Again, a 9-day season statewide. Moving to elk, again, no major changes. Our archery spike bull hunt will go from August 17th to September 6th. The spike bull hunt does close earlier than the any bull hunt, and the reason for that is, as you may be aware, our limited entry hunters are hunting on the same units as the spike hunters. So this gives the folks that drew a limited entry tag the last 7 days of the season, which is closest to the rut, by themselves without having any interference from spike hunters. So it assures that they have a weekend within that by making it 7 days. And that's the rationale for closing that spike hunt early. The any bull hunt will go the same as the deer hunt from October 17th through September 13th. The any weapon season will be October 5th through the 17th, and the muzzleloader season will be October 30th through November 7th. The youth any bull hunt, this is a hunt we've had for a while now. It's usually we try to time it with the rut so the youth have a higher chance of killing a bull. That'll be September 14th through the 22nd. And there's a special late youth any bull hunt that takes place in the Northeast region on the Vernal subunit. And that's basically to take advantage of some bulls that are not available to hunters during the season because they're primarily on private land. When we get some weather, it does push them off those private lands and they end up on some BLM ground where they are accessible. So given that we don't know what the weather is going to do, the region decided to have a long season for that so those youths can have a chance to harvest. It's been about 15 permits in the past, so it's not really a whole lot of opportunity, but at least those few youth in that area that draw that can have an opportunity to harvest a bull. Okay, I'll move into some of the our recommendations. We have one recommendation that affects all the regions. It's a statewide recommendation. This is to allow youth to purchase unlimited over-the-counter general season archery permits. This would take place after the drawing, so the youth would still put in the drawing, and they have actually a better chance than most to draw in the drawing because 20% are set aside for youth. But if by any chance they did not draw, this would allow them to basically go and buy an over-the-counter archery tag. Say dad drew for X unit, they can go and purchase a tag for that unit. There is some concern that by putting the word unlimited up there that there's going to be droves of these being sold. We had a similar thing 2 years ago. We did it for 2 years where we had 1,500 permits in a similar approach where they could go and buy them over the counter, and they were statewide archery at that time, and we only sold about 450. So we don't anticipate that many youths participating in this, but it does give those that have that opportunity to just go ahead and purchase them and then go hunting. So and if we do see that the number, you know, starts to rise and is affecting harvest in any way, we could definitely limit that number by unit if we needed to. But we feel, at least right off the bat, I think to have it unlimited makes it easier for youth, and the easier you make it, the more chances you will have of people participating.
One question. So when you say, like, if their dad or someone in their family had a tag, they could go purchase a tag, does that mean that tag would still have a unit associated?
Yeah. They're unit-based. It's a statewide recommendation, but they're unit, the tags would be, they'd have to purchase it for a specific unit. Yeah. Sorry for the confusion there. All right, some region-based recommendations. The Southern Region is recommending changing the Fillmore Oak Creek South unit from limited entry to any bull. This actually already passed, has come in front of the RAC and the Wildlife Board in the unit plans, but this is just making sure that it makes it into the proclamation or the guidebook. Similarly, they recommend changing the portion of the beaver unit that's west of I-15 to any bull as well. Both of those units are fairly similar, the west of I-15 and the Fillmore Oak Creek, where there's, you know, not great elk habitat. The elk tend to kind of gravitate to the agricultural fields, and there's, you know, that's kind of their summer range is agriculture. There's plenty of winter range out there, but just not very much summer range. So it kind of fits the mold of what we call an any bull unit, where, you know, these animals are primarily on private land, so access will limit harvest but by having it that way. Again, this one passed the Wildlife Board during the unit plan process. Okay, Southeast Region, most of these are just boundary changes that were done in this region basically to make species match one another. I'll go ahead and read through them. Modify the Henry Mountains deer, elk, bighorn sheep hunt boundaries, and the San Rafael South pronghorn hunt boundary to basically exclude Capitol Reef National Park. An agreement that was struck between the region and the park said that we would make that change. Right now, even though you can't hunt the park, the boundary goes to a road that crosses the park. So even you can drive that road, but you can't hunt off of it. So just to make it clear, they made the boundary the actual boundary of the park. Modify the Book Cliffs South bighorn sheep and pronghorn hunt boundaries to match the deer boundary. This is basically takes the boundary from the Green River itself, I don't know, about a quarter mile to the east, to the road that basically takes off from Green River up to the river itself. This is what the deer boundary is, and just to make things match up, they're recommending changing the bighorn sheep and pronghorn boundary. So modify the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek South limited entry elk boundary to match that of deer. This is exactly the same change, but the elk boundary doesn't include, it only includes the south part of the Book Cliffs. So it has to be a separate boundary. Modify the 9 mile Range Creek to match the boundary above. So basically, because the 9 mile is adjacent to the Book Cliffs, just moves that boundary to so they both match each other. Modify the La Salle Mountains and San Juan limited entry elk hunt boundaries to match the changes in general season deer. This is that small part in kind of the southwestern part of the La Salle unit. It's a little bit of desert country that does occasionally see deer and elk. It was added onto the La Salles and taken away from the San Juan on the deer, and they want to do the same thing to make them all match up. And then lastly, the modify the La Salle Potash Bighorn Sheep and the La Salle South Cisco Pronghorn Hunt boundary, so they're both the same, and they'll also have the same name. It's going to be La Salle Potash South Cisco. So both pronghorn and sheep will have the same boundary. That way we don't have multiple boundaries for multiple species. Okay, moving to the Northern Region changes. They're recommending changing the Pilot Mountain limited entry elk hunt boundary to include some private land where depredation is occurring. Currently, the boundary kind of hugs the base of the Pilot Mountains. This kind of puts the boundary out a little ways into the flats and includes some of that private land where they have some depredation. And the landowner has asked for that and is willing to allow hunters on his place to hunt. So it was a win-win thing for that northern region. They're also recommending adding premium limited elk hunt on the Cache Meadowvale unit. As you know, on most of our elk units, we have all the weapon types, and then we have a premium hunt, which basically allows the hunter who draws that to hunt all of those weapon types so they can hunt all seasons. For some reason, the Cache Meadowville did not have that hunt. I think it's a byproduct of initially didn't have a lot of permits, but eventually it did have enough permits to have that hunt. We just never added it. So this is just taking care of an oversight. And then recommending adding a bighorn sheep hunt on the Pilot Mountains for 2013 per our agreement with Nevada. We have an MOU or a memorandum of understanding with Nevada that says since we share that mountain range and the bighorn sheep population on that range, if there are enough sheep to hunt, if there's enough for two tags, we have one and they have one. But if there's only enough for one tag, then we alternate years. They had the tag last year, but they just flew it, and I guess there are enough sheep on that unit to have two permits this year. So both Nevada and Utah will have a permit, and they will. They both can hunt both sides of the boundary as well. Next is recommending allowing harvest of either sex on the Ogden Extended Archery Deer Unit to be consistent statewide. The extended archery deer unit on the Ogden right now is buck only, and to make it consistent with the Wasatch Front, which is just to the south of it, they're recommending going to either sex. And this does make sense where we're using these hunts to basically try to control some of those populations that are in interface with neighborhoods and things like that. The last one is to clarify the boundary description. This is on the cache unit to inform hunters that the posted area around the meadow at Hardware Ranch, WMA, is close to hunting. It's always been close to hunting. They've always posted it, but it's just never been in the boundary description. So we'll just put some wording in the boundary description saying that to be aware that there you can't hunt around the meadow and Hardware Ranch. Okay, Central Region recommendations. They're recommending adding a late any weapon limited entry elk hunt on the Wasatch, the Nebo, and the Deep Creek units to reduce crowding. Initially, those units did have a late hunt, but we did away with them when we realized that success rate on the late and the rut hunt were almost identical. And at that time, we didn't have a lot of tags, so we just stuck with one hunt, and that was during the rut. Now that we're getting quite a few permits on all of those units, it makes sense to open that hunt up again and basically spread the hunting pressure so we're not having hunter crowding issues during that limited entry hunt. Also recommending adding a premium limited entry elk hunt on the Deep Creeks. This is similar to that Meadowville where, because at one point we didn't have enough permits on the Deep Creeks to have a premium, but now that we're getting to a point where we can, we would like to add that so to be consistent. And then the region's recommending adding a mountain goat hunt on the Nebo unit. This has been a long time coming for the division. We've wanted to have goats on the Nebo unit for a long time, and it's good to see that we're finally going to be able to have a hunt. They did a survey this last year and found roughly 50 goats, at least that's what they counted, and about half are on the Lofer Mountain part of the unit and half on actually Mount Nebo itself. So this will offer an opportunity to start hunting those goats as the population increases. And then they're recommending discontinuing the late doe only hunt on the Wasatch Front extended archery area. This is to be consistent with the Ogden. So since the Ogden now is either sex, the Wasatch is either sex, we did have a late doe hunt on the Wasatch that went from December 1st to December 15th. That'll be discontinued and all the hunts will end the end of November from now on. Okay, that's it for the regional recommendation. Just some key dates that I always like to mention that are in our rule and will go in our guidebook. The big game drawing for bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime, and new dedicated hunter applicants will be February 1st through March 4th of 2013. Those that want to apply for a bonus point, preference point, or withdraw their application actually have till March 11th to do so. So they have a little bit longer. And then the results should be posted May 31st, 2013. Lifetime license questionnaire and unit selection deadlines. Last year was the first year we went to unit by unit, so we actually had lifetime license holders all had to send a selection questionnaire. But since now they have picked units, they'll automatically get that unit if they don't send one in. But if they do want to change a unit, they have to have that questionnaire in by March 4th, 2013. Those that didn't hunt in 2012 and failed to choose a unit by the deadline can just obtain whatever's left over after the drawing. Okay, shed antler and shed horn season dates. The online course certificate is required if you're going to hunt from, if you're going to not hunt, but gather antlers or horns from February 1st through April 15th. If you want to do that outside of those dates, you don't need to go online and take that course and print the certificate. Dates when hunters may purchase or sell big game or its parts. Antlers, heads, and horns of legally taken big game may be bought or sold February 15th through July 31st. The rationale for that is basically to make those seasons outside of the hunting season so people are not going up on the mountain shooting an animal, selling the head, and then going up and shooting another one and selling the head. So basically not have an incentive for people having to take more than one animal. And then inversely, the untanned hides of legally taken big game may be bought or sold from August 1st through February 14th. This is basically to encourage those who do harvest something legally. A green hide is usually best if it's sold during the season, just because it's, that way they don't have to have it frozen or whatever to take care of it. Okay, some disabled hunter general season hunt extension dates. These again didn't change from last year. We just switched them one day to match the calendar. So, and these are extensions for those disabled hunters that come and apply for a COR, and they have to be permanently disabled with a note from the doctor to get these extensions. So, archery deer. They get a preseason extension, so they hunt before the season, August 12th through the 16th. Muzzleloader deer, September 20th through the 24th. The anti-weapon deer, October 14th through the 18th. The archery elk is the same as the deer, August 12th through the 16th. The muzzleloader anti-bull elk, November 8th through the 13th. And then any weapon, any bull elk, will be September 14th through the 22nd. And on that one, they can also hunt in that area in the northeast region during the youth hunt as well. So they can get in on some of that if they have time to do so. Muzzleloader spike, November 11th through the 15th. And the any weapon spike elk, October 18th through the 22nd. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have any questions for the division from the RAC?
Hey, I got one question. On this San Juan boundary change, is that for the any bull elk hunt or just the limited entry bull?
It's both. So when you change the limited entry elk, well, the any bull, I believe it's both, right, Justin?
I
was going to say, because that boundary should go clear over the state line.
Oh, okay.
So it's just limited entry.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that would mean it would be the spike as well.
Right.
Yeah. So it would be general season spike and limited entry.
Okay.
So I just wanted to clarify on that youth archery hunt. Those tags have to be a specific unit. I get heartburn when we start talking when the words statewide and archery get in the same sentence. So
that's a statewide recommendation. But yeah, it is. They have to pick a unit when they go to buy their permit.
And you mentioned the number 450 was kind of something that come from the past when something similar was done.
Right.
But that was back when we were statewide.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So
we're assuming or hoping that they will be similar in number and that they will spread out in the units.
Yeah, and that's been a trend with almost every hunter type we have, is they you know, everybody's always afraid they're all going to go to one unit, but that's never the case.
As am I. Yeah. I don't want to see them all up on Skyline.
Okay. Does the vision have a number in mind that if they exceed, that you're going to start getting nervous?
We don't have a number in mind where we will start getting nervous until we do some harvest surveys and see what their success rates are. And kind of, it has to do with, you know, what their effect is on the unit, not how many permits they buy. So we'll be surveying them and seeing what their harvest success is. And then if we start seeing maybe one unit go above, you know, where they are harvesting at a pretty good success rate and the numbers are high, then we might start thinking about, and where it starts affecting buck door ratio, I guess, is when we would start thinking, maybe we need to limit it on this or that unit. And if we do that, we would do it statewide. You know, we'd say, you know, there will be a percentage of the permits on each unit. Because to hold it at a specific number, some units have, 500 permits, some units have 5,000 permits. So to hold it at a specific number per unit wouldn't make sense. I think a percentage per unit would probably be better.
At one time we kind of capped our permits at 97,000. Mm-hmm. We're down to, 95 something now?
We're at 86.5 right
86.5.
Now.
86.5.
Yeah.
Is that number just a self-imposed number that you guys have put on your?
Yeah, that number can change annually depending on what the buck-to-doe ratio does. So it could go up or down, depending on what units do. It was a starting point basically. And then when we do our classifications, look at buck-to-doe ratios, if we need to reduce permits to get to a ratio, we will. And then inversely, if we need to increase it to a little lower, a buck doe ratio, we will as well.
Okay, thank you.
On this 9 mile Range Creek boundary change and the book cliff boundary change, isn't that a tough little deal to control and control from a law enforcement standpoint?
You want law enforcement to comment on that?
I don't care. I just want to know.
Who's coming?
JD, I'm kind of glad you're coming. I'll feel a little bit easier about beating you up.
You say that once more.
The boundary change right here in Green River on the Book Cliff South and the Range Creek. 9 mile Range Creek units. All it takes in is this little bit of river bottom above us right here. That just looks like a really hard boundary to manage.
I just from looking at it, I don't think it'd be too tough with that road going up along the river.
Do you know who your landowners are up there?
I haven't dealt much with them.
Okay. But good luck.
If I remember right,
odd little piece to pull out.
If I remember right,
the river
though,
as a boundary.
It's because the book close is limited entry, and with all those landowners along there,
so you're trying.
They
to
wanted to be in the landowner association, so it was kind of a deal they worked out so that they could hunt general season deer, but still be on that book cliffs unit. And because of that, they've just had to switch that, extend the.
Okay.
Now they're calling it the 9 mile Range Creek clear to the Hastings Road, I guess.
Right. That just looks like a tough little area to.
You know, it's.
In between the river and Hastings Road.
It's not a lot of extra, and I think, like Darius said, it's the agricultural stuff. I'm just not for sure. I know TJ out of Moab's dealt with landowners a lot more here than I have.
Okay.
Still being
good
fairly.
Good enough, JD. Thank you. I got one more question now. On that extended late season youth hunt, you're targeting Diamond Mountain?
Extended.
Or did I misread that?
No, not Diamond Mountain. It's down below that, so it's in. The boundary's not there for that one. The boundary hasn't changed. So. We're talking any bull?
Youth late season any bull hunt,
right.
November 30th to
mm-hmm.
January 15th.
Yeah.
Unit number 9.
Right, it's within that unit, but the hunt boundary doesn't include Diamond Mountain.
What's
that like hunt, those long season hunts anyway.
Yeah, so that hunt's been there for 3 years now. And, you know, it hasn't really been.
How many kids get tags for that?
It's about 15. It's been 15 in the past, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Questions from the rack? Don't know if we really have a public. Mike, do you have any questions? How about young Mr. Tracy? You got any questions? Okay. Any comments from the public? Okay, let's go ahead and discuss the, hopefully end up with a motion. Okay. Anybody have a
Looks good to me.
I would move that we accept the recommendations as they've been presented.
I second.
Moved by Blair to accept the division's recommendation, seconded by Charlie. All in favor? Opposed?
Oh, I'm not opposed, I'm sorry. I fell asleep with my arm.
One opposed.
Rubber stamp.
Okay. Scott, you want to talk to us about CWMUs?
I'm Scott McFarland, the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the division. And I guess I better get the right slideshow up there. And thank you, Mr. Chair and RAC members. Tonight I will be presenting the 2013 Buck and Bull CWMU and Landowner Association recommendations for the division. Before I get into this, I'll explain basically what we do with the CWMUs. There's three different types of applications that we get from the CWMUs yearly. And the first kind is a new application. Obviously, that's somebody that's never been into a CWMU. Or it's somebody that has changed their land ownership or property boundaries or acreage more than 34%. Sometimes CWMUs will skip a year, and if they didn't have a certificate of registration for that previous year, when they apply again, it goes into the new category. The other kind is a renewal application. A renewal is, our CWMUs go on three-year renewal cycles. When they apply for it, they're good for 3 years. And we had 10 of those CWMUs that came up for renewal this year. And the other kind is a change application. The CWMUs are allowed to change their management plans and certain items on their application on a yearly basis. One of those being permit numbers, mostly to accommodate increasing or decreasing populations. What requires RAC and board approval on that is any permit number change or the season date change or the split, the ratio that they get from the public-private ratio split that they get. So in this year we had, for 2013, we had 8 new applications. 2 were due to land ownership changes. 1 was because they increased their acreage greater than 34%. 2 did not have CORs, certificate of registrations in 2012. And we had three brand new applications. 10 of the CWMUs required renewal for 2013 to the 2015 period. 8 CWMUs submitted change applications requiring RAC and board approval. 4 of the CWMUs have moose permit reductions that were requested by the DWR, and 2 of those are split recommendations, and I'll explain those. And we had 1 discontinued application added to they were incorporated into another CWMU. Based on the recommendations this year, that would come to a total of 120 CWMUs for the 2013 season. As an overview, as I said, there's proposed 120 CWMUs statewide. The breakdown for the regions would be the northern region taking the lion's share of those at 71. Northeastern would have 7, central 13, southeastern region 16 CWMUs, and southern region would have 13. In this program, there's over 2.1 million acres enrolled in the program, of which 97% of that is all private land. 444 landowners are participating in the CWMU program currently. The recommendations for 2013 on numbers, and I'll go through these really quickly. Deer private permits would have 1,983, public 262. Management buck permits, which are all in the southern region, they're recommending 4 private permits, 1 public permit, 903 elk private permits, and 137 public elk permits, 74 private pronghorn permits, and 53 public permits. Moose permits, we'd have 49 private permits and 31 public permits. There's a total of 3,013 private permits and 484 public permits, which constitute about 14% of the total permits issued. Okay, and I'll go through these regions. I'll do a little more detail for the southeast region here, but I'll go through these really quick. Northern region had 3 new applications. The division is recommending approval of all of those. They had 6 renewal applications. They were already, there were very few changes on those, and recommending approval of all 6 of the renewal applications for the northern region. The change applications, there are quite a few. There's 7 change applications, and most of these were requesting additional permits. Some were season dates. The Deseret CWMU is applying for a later season date. They had been going to October 31st, and they requested to go to November 10th, and they're requesting an elk variance to go to November 20th also. The only one that was different on this is the double cone CWMU is an elk. Let's see. That's not a different one. Strike that. Okay. Anyways, the division recommends approval of all of these. The recommended changes the division has made is they're all in the northern region. They're in the Ogden unit. They're all Moose recommendations. What we did in any of the limited entry units, when there's a decrease in the total unit permits, the CWMUs need to take that a percentage reduction also based on the acreage that they have in it. And 2 of these were agreed upon by the landowners, and 2 of them were split recommendations. And basically what the reduction would be, they're all in the 3-year, they're in the first year of their 3-year application management plan. So 2012 is already done, but in 2013, we've requested that they drop 1 public and 1 private permit, or 2 public and 2 private permits over the next 2 years to match the reduction in the unit and to still maintain their 60-40 split on their moose permits. Northeastern region had 2 applications, both of them new. They're recommending denial of the Circle Bar Ranch based on some problems with property boundaries. It meets the technical qualifications for a CWMU, but it doesn't really constitute a good CWMU according to the region. So they're recommending denial of that. Central region had 4 1 new and 3 renewals. They're recommending denial of the Crab Creek CWMU because of some misrepresentations on property ownership on their CWMU application. The rest, the division is recommending approval of. Southeastern region, the JB Ranch is, it was an existing CWMU. It changed property ownership greater than the 34%. And so what it does is it kicks it into the new category for a CWMU. It was an old, it's one of the older CWMUs. And what this does is, in order to maintain the elk, have the elk on the CWMU, because it is under acreage, it requires a variance. Now, there's a process in our rule that allows for this, and what it's gone through is the division review and recommendation, and also the majority vote of the CWMU committee. Both of those recommended approval of the acreage variance for the JB Ranch. It's a CWMU that has operated quite successfully, provided a good hunting experience for public and private hunters, and they've cooperated very well with the antlerless removal program too. And Summit Point just asked for an increase in elk permits. I believe that was a 2-bull elk increase for the public, for the private. And we recommend approval of that. Southern region applications, the grazing pasture had the same situation as the JB Ranch. It requires an acreage variance. It's gone through the same process, and the division recommends approval of that. Johnson Mountain Ranch is a renewal, and we approve that also. And that's the end of the CWMU recommendations. Any questions? Sure.
Can you tell us where Summit Point and JB are located?
I'd better have the region do that. I'd be more familiar with that.
Summit Point is northeast of Monticello, south of Point, west Summit. JB Ranch is on the south, northeast end of the south.
Does Summit Point include the new property that the Nature Conservancy just bought, Guy?
No.
Okay.
I can't pick him up on the mic if he's answering somebody there.
Come on, guys.
He's coming up.
No yelling from the back. Is that what you're saying? What do you want me to say? It doesn't include Summit Point's not in that area or the where the new property is.
Do you want him to restate where those CWUs are, Brent, for the record?
Yeah, you know.
Okay. Summit Point is northeast of Monticello, and JB Ranch is on the northeast side of LaSalle's private ranch.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I got a couple questions. Just, I don't want to take a lot of time. I don't need a real detailed answer, but can you remind us how these tags are allocated or how the decision is made on those? Is it by acreage? Is it by, I mean, how do we get to a deer number of 79 total permits, 66 private, 13 public? How do we get to that?
I'll try and make this as simple as
I can.
That's
all I'm asking.
Yeah, in a limited entry unit, we have to follow it, the guidelines just as it was a landowner association. So a percentage, whatever percentage of that unit of the habitat that they have in the CWMU is what percentage that should be allocated to the CWMU out of the total number that's allocated for the unit. On a, say, an open bull or a deer unit that doesn't have, it's not a limited entry unit, it's basically an agreement between the biologist and the CWMU operator. And how they're allocated as far as splits, the landowners or the CWMU operators or president, whoever makes the decision, has the option to have a variety of splits, split options. Most of them have a 90-10 split, and that's 90% of the tags go to the private end and 10% go to the public. And with that, when they have antlerless tags, that means that 100% of the antlerless tags go to the public. If they opt for a different split, say like an 85-15 is the next one they can take, it allows them, the private landowners, to keep 25% of the antlerless tags and 75% go to the public, and then it goes on down as the splits changes. Is that?
Sort of.
Okay.
No. Okay, so if you have a unit and we're taking the acreage of the whole unit, and then we have the acreage of the CWMU, mm-hmm. and that, so we're using that percentage, and then that's the percentage of the animals as well?
That's in a limited entry unit.
In a limited entry.
Yeah, okay. If it's included in a limited entry unit.
Okay. And if it's not, if it's in a general unit?
Then it's up to a mutual agreement between the operator and basically the biologist. Biologist is there to make sure that, you know, they're not doing over-harvesting or under-harvesting for that matter.
Okay.
So
there's some leeway there.
Yeah, there's leeway.
If they're in the general unit. Okay. On the, well, okay, that answers that question too.
Questions I had. Sure. So on the two units that needed the variance, is the acreage needed for the elk 10,000, and because those were below, what's the variance?
Yeah, I probably should have explained that a little better. Both those units were brought into the system before there was the 10,000 acre minimum on it, and so they're basically grandfathered into the system. And since then, the requirement for an elk CWMU is minimum of 10,000 acres, contiguous acres. So in order for them to keep that, it requires a variance because it is an under acreage and a non-conforming unit. So.
I noticed that the one was like 66, significantly under. So do they have to increase that number, or
It will stay at that. It's the same unit that has been working very successfully in the past. They aren't increasing acreage. In fact, the same people are running the unit, that just the land ownership has changed. So
on those hills, they added 640 acres of state ground. My assumption is that you agreed to that based on the increasing the public permit by one.
Yeah, they actually decreased their private permits by one and increased their public permits one.
So that's how you did that.
Yeah, and that one is because the land, the acreage, the public land was completely surrounded by the private land.
Gotcha. Thank you. So.
Questions from the RAC? Mike, you're going to have to assign your students. Start coming so we get an audience.
No, this is just fine.
Okay, I guess we'll skip questions and comments from the audience unless there's a major objection from either of you two. And then we'll go ahead and have discussion amongst the RAC and a motion.
I guess everything's fine. If these guys wanted to complain, they'd be here. So are you asking for a motion now?
Okay. If we're ready.
Yeah, I make a motion that we pass it as it has been presented to us.
Second. We have a motion from Charlie to approve as presented by the division, seconded by Wayne. All in favor? Unanimous. Landowner permit number, Scott.
Okay. Just as a clarification on that, all of the people that were involved in the split recommendations or the denials were all notified of the process to come to the RAC and the board meetings, so they all have been notified. The next recommendations I will be presenting will be Landowner Association, the voucher recommendations for 2013. I'll just give a brief overview of what the Landowner Associations are. It's a program where you can, in a limited entry unit, landowners can be eligible for a restricted or limited number of tags if they form an association that comprises of 51, at least 51% of the private lands that are within that limited entry unit. And the intent of this program was to encourage private landowners to manage their property for wildlife. It was also a means of compensation for them for providing wildlife habitat on their properties. And in some cases, it allowed the division also to increase wildlife populations in those in selected units. So the recommendations for 2013, we received 14 applications. It's down one from last year. The DWR recommends approval of 10 of the applications as received, and there were 4 split recommendations on these. For total numbers for 2013 in the Landowner Associations for vouchers, the recommendations would be out of the 14 Landowner Associations, 127 deer vouchers, 3 management buck deer vouchers, all in the southern region, 77 elk vouchers, and 7 pronghorn vouchers. As I mentioned, there were 4 split recommendations disagreeing between the landowner associations and the division. They were the Pavant Mountain Landowner Association, as Bull Elk Landowner Association. They requested 7 permits, and I'll explain this. This is the number that they requested are the same number that they had the previous year. And because of a reduction in the limited entry permits, the entire unit permits, because of our rule and the way that everything is calculated, they need to take a percentage reduction also. So they requested, Pavant Mountain requested 7 permits. They qualify for 5, and the division recommends 5. Ponsagant Landowner Wildlife Association, they have managed, it's the only one that has management buck deer permits. They requested 4, they qualify for 3, and the division recommends 3. South Fork of the Sevier River Landowner Association is a buck pronghorn unit, and they requested 6, and because of the reduction in the unit permits, they qualify for 4, and the division recommends 4. Indian Peaks Landowner Association is a bull elk landowner association. They qualify for 3. The DWR recommends 3, but the disagreement is that they would like them to have premium permits, them be premium permits, which allows them to hunt all 3 seasons, but that's not allowed for in the rule. So, and that concludes the Landowner Association presentation.
So these tags are figured then a little bit differently than the CWMUs. These are based more on the limited entry unit that they're in and the percentage. Is this a specific percentage of the tags in the limited entry unit?
Yeah, the limited entry unit is allocated when they make recommendations. They say this many tags or permits are allocated for the unit, and the limited entry landowner association. If it qualifies for whatever percentage of the habitat they have within that unit. So if they have 50, for simplicity's sake, if the landowner association comprises 50% of the habitat in the unit, they would qualify for 50% of the tags that are allocated for that unit.
I'm sorry, are you done?
No, I'm done.
Huh?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, like, you have to be in a limited entry for for this landowner association thing to kick in, right?
That's correct.
And so it's the same boundaries as the limited entry.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions? Any questions, comments from the
public. Go back to the rack and have discussion. A motion, please.
I would move that we accept the landowner permit numbers as they are presented.
I second that.
We have a motion from Blair to accept the landowner permit recommendations as presented, seconded by Chris. All in favor? Unanimous.